Hey, folks, what would you do this summer with all the money you'd save if you didn't have a car payment for the next 5 months? Hopefully, buy lots of merchandise for the Mike Church Trading Post. Well, right now at Bulldog Kia in Athens, Georgia, take advantage of the Summer's on Us sales event with zero payments for 5 months. Plus, get 0% financing for up to 66 months on the one-of-a-kind Kia Soul, or the high-tech Kia Forte, or the newly redesigned Kia Optima. Bulldog Kia is where Mrs. Church and I have purchased our vehicle since 2011. They're great friends, and they'll treat you right, too. And for Mike Church Show listeners anywhere in the continental U.S., they will ship your new Kia to you for free. Don't cost nothing. That means your new Kia is only a click or call away. For details, call them at 855-BULLDOG or go to bulldogkia.com. We'll see you at Bulldog Kia.
Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Are you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
Stop looking at the woman in the red dress. Welcome to another week of the Mark Rosen Show. Here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be. We're live Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Central Time to 8 a.m. Central Time, followed by my good friend Mike Church, host of the Mike Church Show. He starts at 8, goes on till 11-ish. As a live call-in program, you can always call us at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. And since you're listening to the Mark Roslin Show, that means you have signed up to be part of the Matrix Delta Force Rescue Team. We are out there to rescue our fellow citizens of our states, not of America, and help them unplug the Matrix cable that is in the back of their head that they don't know is there. You are a Delta Force commando. Your job, like mine, is to figure out ways to rescue our fellow man. He doesn't understand, or she doesn't understand, they have been trapped at birth, well, probably at kindergarten. A cable was inserted in the back of all of our heads, and we were force-fed from kindergarten on this great deception. And it's our job to help people be aware, number one, that they have the cable plugged in, and then number two, that they actually take proactive steps to unplug from the Matrix system. And I ain't kidding. So I'm glad you joined us here. We're going to talk about things you will not hear on mainstream conservative talk radio. I exhort you, beg you, plead with you, cajole to turn it off. Don't listen to mainstream conservative talk radio. They will merely help you plug the cable back in. If it's a third of the way out while you're listening to this show, and then my good friend Mike Church, host of the Mike Church Show, or Suzanne Sherman over at the Suzanne Option, if we've helped you begin the process of unplugging and then you accidentally swerve back into the Beck option on Glenn Beck or the other mainstream conservative talk show host, understand they will merely plug that cable back in. And it may not even be for malicious reasons. I don't think that it is. The reality is they've got the cable plugged in their head, just as I had the cable plugged in my head. Until by good fortune or God's providence, I was made aware that I had this cable in my head. It is amazing at times how art can imitate life, right? And I think the Matrix, now not in the real sense of the Matrix. I think you all understand that. I'm not suggesting we live in some computer program somewhere and our bodies are really located in pods stacked a mile high somewhere on the planet. It's the system of government we have that we've all plugged into or has been plugged into the back of our heads that this is the only way you can have a civil society is to have a Hobbesian type of government. We'll get to that eventually, hopefully today, where a small group of elite people lead you. They rule you. They tell you what you can and cannot do. They tell you how much money you are allowed to keep. They inform you of how far and how you can travel. They restrict what you can do to earn a living. This is the Matrix we're all plugged into. And unfortunately, we have been trained to accept the premise of this government. And anytime you say anything other or accept the premise of this government, you're considered a nut job, a crazy man. In some cases, you're considered treasonous. In very small cases, you're considered sinning. So that is the result of the cable being plugged in the back of the heads of way too many people. And our job here at the Mark Kreslin Show and you as part of the Delta Force, we need to go in and rescue our fellow man. We are on a rescue mission, as I've talked about many times on the air. If we remember the movie The Black Hawk Down, when it was called out, the Black Hawk is going down, it was still in the process of crashing. Too many people think we are still in the process of crashing, both culturally and economically. They think we're in the process of crashing, and somehow, if we just flip the right series of switches or we press the right pedals, we can still land this baby. We can still bring her in. My contention is the Black Hawk is down. It is crashed. You're not putting new rotors on that thing, and it's not going to fly away. It is just crashed. And when we all can accept that reality, well, now we begin to really have an opportunity to figure out a rescue mission. What did they do when the Black Hawk went down? Did they just say, oh, well, man, that really stinks. We lost one. No, immediately they put in the plans a rescue mission. How do we rescue? How do we save those who are still in the chopper that might be alive, that may have survived the crash? How do we save them? Well, folks, that's what we're here to do. The Black Hawk is down. The culture is down. The government is down. The system of government we have is down. The economy is down. How do we rescue those who want to be rescued? And I'm not so pie in the sky to believe that everybody in these United States, rapidly moving towards the United States of America, I'm not convinced everybody in these United States want to be rescued. They have a affection towards government. They have a passion to be ruled and led. I don't. So that's what you're here for, folks. That's what you're part of the Mark Kreslin Show and the Delta Force team that is trying to unplug our coworkers, family, friends. I got a note from somebody yesterday over the weekend that their father had unplugged himself from the Matrix. Welcome to free thinking. I was in it as well. It is refreshing to get away from it, isn't it? And it makes understanding what happens on mainstream conservative talk radio crystal clear, doesn't it? You begin to realize, like I have come to the conclusion, there are no solutions whatsoever on mainstream conservative talk radio. There are only real solutions being proffered here on the Veritas Radio Network. It's why it's so important for this network to continue its growth trajectory. And we are growing. You are part of a growing group of people. I remember, back in the 80s when I first heard this guy on the radio, many of you do as well. I'm sorry, about 87, somewhere around there. I was still working on Capitol Hill. And this guy came on the radio, and his name was Rush Limbaugh. And I can't even remember how I found him, but I was driving home, and I remember going in and talking to my wife and saying, "Patty, you're not going to believe this, but there's this guy on the radio who sounds like what we believe, saying things we believe. His name is Rush Limbaugh." And as we all listened to Rush in the 80s and in through the 90s, it was fun to be part of something that was growing, wasn't it? I remember when he just broke 100 radio stations, and that suddenly felt like we had some power, right? We had a voice that was speaking on behalf of us. At that point, all you really had was the Wall Street Journal editorial page and the Washington Times. That was about it. The internet was not up and running that we could use. There was no way to get out any other kind of message. And what we had was Limbaugh and the Washington Times and the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. But heck, that was better than what we had prior to that, which was just the Washington Times, a moony newspaper in Washington, D.C., in the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal that had Kudlow and a few other guys on there writing what was then considered conservative thinking. And Limbaugh shows up. And you, if you all remember, if you all tuned into him back there in the 80s, you know exactly of what I speak. There was an excitement being part of something that was growing. It really was. You felt like you were part of a movement that was beginning to finally emerge. We would say to ourselves, there, we finally have somebody that is saying what we said. I mean, occasionally we'd have on firing line Pat Buchanan and guys out there. But by far, we all understood that the liberals dominated media, and it was fun to be part of something that appeared to be becoming a force in politics. Well, I hope you see the same things happening here at the Veritas Radio Network. Can we say we're on 600 channel stations right now? No. But neither could Limbaugh in 88. He couldn't say he arrived at his 600 until many, many years later. It took a kind of viral word of mouth effort to launch his what became Excellence in Broadcasting Network that dominated the talk radio circuit for literally a decade. And then others began to appear, and before you know it, we end up with a lot of Limbaugh lookalikes. But it was fun being part of something new. It was invigorating, and it was certainly encouraging to think, wow, we may be part of something that really can have some impact in this world. And yeah, all I get to do is listen and cheer Limbaugh on. But you know, the reality is, finally, we have a voice out there. Well, I think the Veritas Radio Network is very similar in that regard. We're an upstart. We acknowledge that. We don't back away from the realities there. We need to get to 1 million listeners sooner than later. But it's going to take those of you in the listening audience. We know that this is a new way to listen, this format through the internet. And we're exploring all sorts of different ways to get our signal out. It's a challenge to think in terms of multiple strains of or multiple avenues to get the signal out. But we are working on that diligently. Mike puts in many, 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 many hours weekly, along with David Simpson and Dr. Michael T. George and many others on the network. We all work together to try to figure out a way to get the signal out, to break through the barrier so we can get to the average person. Well, part of that is just you guys helping us, and thank you for helping us. Thank you for referring your friends here. Thank you for taking the risk to have your friends come over here to the new oasis in a literal desert of thought out there. I mean, let's be honest. This is an arid, dry, painful desert we all live in when it comes to real solutions versus the sophomoric solutions that's offered that are offered by the Republican Party or mainstream conservative talk radio. So please understand that when I make critical comments of mainstream conservative talk radio, it's not of the person. Man, talk radio owes a debt of gratitude to Rush Limbaugh. He broke through what seemingly were impossible barriers, certainly on FM in major media. And he took a circuitous route and went the old AM route, which was by then not really even a form of broadcast very many people listened to. But they saw an opening there. They jumped in there. They were first in. They created a blue ocean. If you're familiar with the Harvard Business School's concept of blue ocean and red ocean, they created a blue ocean, and they sailed clear for quite a while until others came on the field. Well, we're first in here on the internet, and our sole delivery mechanism right now is through the internet. And you're part of it. You're at the ground floor, if you will. And we thank you for those of you who support what we're doing here financially. Thank you for those of you who are referring your friends over here to listen. We've got a lot to cover today. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about our culture and a typical more evidence that the culture is down. It's not melting down. It's down. We're going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. He popped up in the news on my radar screen this weekend. I always like it when people take after Trump because that usually exposes one of the great problems that we have in politics today, and that's status quo. It's a great, great problem. And we have this disruptive force that has shown up now. Let me give my initial disclaimer. I am not voting for Donald Trump. I will not be voting for any president this year. And I haven't last year, the last cycle. I will be writing in on my ballot, I do not consent to this system of government. Because we're picking up new listeners all the time. I'll explain what I mean when we get to that topic. And then finally, we're going to take a look at, if we get to it, Brexit and what's happening over there. Some big changes are coming. Big changes have come, actually, over there. And I will tell you right out of the gate, if I'm a betting man, at this point, I'm probably betting they're not going to leave. They're going to remain. But I want to give you the silver cloud, the silver lining to that cloud. And I don't live there in the United Kingdom. I'm not part of the European Union, so I can't tell you for certain whether it's a good idea to leave or not. But that's not the point of why I was excited about Brexit, why I was excited about Scotland, why I was excited about, am excited about Catalonia, why I'm excited to hear the word Texit. Mike eventually is going to have Lord Monckton on, who wrote an article about Texit. I think he stole it from the Mark Kreslin show, because I came up with Texit, Oak Exit, La Exit, Arc Exit, Miss Exit, and Ella Exit, only 2 weeks later to see it show up in Lord Monckton's article. So I think I was ripped off. So, but I don't care if Texas exits. You know, just think about that. I was telling a friend over the weekend, I cannot believe, actually, as a friend many of you in the listening audience know, Dwayne Stovall, he and I had breakfast on Saturday, had a great time together. He's a good guy. And we were talking about just the evolution of thought in the quote-unquote conservative, liberty, whatever you want to call it, movement in the country. The fact is, 10 years ago, I was told not to talk. Well, let me see. We're 2000. It would have been about 7 years ago. I was told not to talk about secession on the radio. And it was a defunct idea. People were just going to negatively react to it. And I agreed. I didn't argue. I thought they're probably right. And here we are in the 2016 time frame, and it's a fairly common topic. Think about how much ground has been gained on secession. Now, certainly people are still going to think you have a third eye. They're going to think you have a second head. Some are going to consider you a traitor. Some are going to consider you hate your country, all that stuff. I've had to put up with that stuff now for, years. But I also hear a lot more people saying, I wonder if I perhaps should begin to think about this a little bit. And folks, that is a good thing. That is a good thing. Because people are beginning to think about real solutions to the problems we face rather than the sophomoric, and I cannot emphasize enough, sophomoric ideas that come out of the Republican Party, that come out of the mainstream conservative talk radio. These are infantile discussions. And so in a weird way, Trump fits into that discussion because we've got a guy here who appears to not be the status quo politician. He's disruptive to politics. And I am one, as a businessman, successfully owning and selling businesses, I am one who supports disruptive business principles, where a new business comes in and shakes things up a little bit and makes the other competitors compete better, or perhaps in some very rare circumstances creates a blue ocean where nobody else is at and then dominates that market segment for a while. That's disruptive business principles. I like them, and I like disruptive business political principles as well. I don't like the status quo, and while, again, I am not voting for Donald Trump, let's be honest, he has disrupted politics, hasn't he? That's kind of an understatement, so we'll get to him in the beginning. But I want to start out this morning with a bit of a celebration. I don't know how many of you follow NBA basketball. My son and I, Trent, do. And after the Thunder lost to the Golden State Warriors, we were very disappointed, obviously. And we got to watch the amazing Steph Curry and Klay Thompson almost single-handedly beat us in Game 6, which we should have won, and there wouldn't have been a Game 7. But nevertheless, it went 7 games and ended up Golden State Warriors playing Cleveland last night for the championship game. And if you watched it, what a game. It was a fantastic game. It was neck and neck most of the night. I think the biggest lead was 8 points. It was back and forth. LeBron had a triple-double last night, meaning he had 10 assists, 10 rebounds, and scored over 10 points. A very quiet Kyrie had a great night. I mean, it was a very fun game to watch, and it was one of those games you want to watch because it's head and head the whole game. It was just a blast. Now, I was not a supporter of Cleveland insofar as Cleveland was my team, but I sure wanted Cleveland to beat Golden State because Golden State had beat the Thunder, and that's what happened last night, as you all know if you watched the game. Because of Kyrie's last minute three-pointer and LeBron having a great finish, they ended up beating what was arguably the best team this year, certainly Golden State Warriors, and perhaps one of those record, they were a record-breaking team this season. And it was just a fun game to watch. And I don't want to, take up too much time talking about the game. I recognize a lot of people out there don't like professional basketball. I used to be in that camp. I like it much more now. Nevertheless, what I wanted to talk about was this new phenomena I see in sports, and I think it kind of speaks to our culture a little bit, and I kind of think it speaks to the changes that have occurred in our culture that has made us softer. Having been a sports fan from very young ages, back in the 60s and 70s, up all the way through the 21st century and here in 2016, I've lived long enough to see a really interesting phenomena that has occurred. And tell me if you think I'm right in this. My son is convinced I have this wrong. Trent thinks I'm completely misreading this. But those of you who have some gray hair on your heads that can remember back to some of the games, whatever sport it was you were watching in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tell me if you agree with this. And I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, call me at 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. I don't think there's necessarily a black and white wrong, right or wrong here, but I have noticed this. And it's the crying victor. I don't know how else to say it. It's the crying victor. The guy who wins feels an interesting need to cry. And I watched it last night with LeBron. You know, the final seconds tick down. There's no way Golden State's going to win. And, you know, pandemonium breaks out there on the court amongst the Cleveland Cavaliers, rightfully so. They just won the national championship. And, of course, the cameras zoom in on the star players, Kyrie and LeBron. LeBron is now on his knees. He's on the ground. And clearly he's either exhausted, which I wasn't sure at the first moment, because he played all 48 minutes. I don't think he sat down at all. And just think about that, running constantly at that level of play for 48 minutes. How many of us could do that and still be competent to take a three-point shot or make a layup? So there he is. I wasn't quite sure initially, was he just exhausted after playing 48 minutes of a highly emotional, intense game? Or was I going to see what I have seen here recently in sports quite a bit, the crying athlete, the crying victor? And sure enough, he got up and it was very clear that, you know, he was overwhelmed with emotion and tears were, you know, streaming down his cheeks and all that. And of course, the commentators just eat that up. It's just amazing how, you know, we don't talk about the triple-double he had. We don't talk about the unbelievable defense that he played. We don't talk about Kyrie's amazing three-point shot with like 10 seconds or 14 seconds left. We don't even talk about Draymond Green on Golden State, who had an unbelievable team. No, what do we talk about? LeBron's being overwhelmed with emotions. You know, this is a sport that has nothing to do with tears. It has everything to do with skill. It has everything to do with performance. It has everything to do with outscoring, outthinking, outstrategizing your opponent. And yet the focus of last night's game was, the focus with last night's game was he overwhelmed with emotion? I saw this at the Daytona 500 years ago after Dale Earnhardt Sr. was killed in that tragic wreck the year prior, and his son Dale Jr. came back and won the next year. The first question out of the reporter's mouth was, well, tell us how you feel about this win, Dale. I mean, the guy just drives 500 miles an hour in traffic that is separated by inches at 200 miles an hour. He drove 500 miles at 200 miles an hour. In high bank turns, extraordinarily dangerous type of driving, in traffic that none of us could possibly even understand at 200 miles an hour. He survives that unbelievable race. And the first question the reporter asks is, well, Dale, how do you feel about this in light of your father getting killed here last year? And over again, it seems like the most important thing after a massive victory by highly trained, I mean, these athletes, like, you guys all know LeBron James. The guy has got bowling ball shoulders. The guy is a beast. He is an athlete. Compared to any of us in this listening audience right now, the guy is a beast. And the most important thing we ask after a major victory over arguably the best team in basketball this year, and perhaps ranking right up there as one of the best teams of all time, the first question that Doris asks is, well, LeBron, tell us how you feel about this game. You're clearly overwhelmed with emotion. We are entering into a time where emotions matter more than anything else. How I feel about something matters more than anything else. And I think our sports have become another barometer of that. Now, am I wrong? Tell me. It'd be hard for me to imagine And I don't think he did. Now, tell me if those of you who watched the Atlanta Braves when Hank Aaron hit 715 to beat old Babe Ruth's record for home runs, I don't think the after-game interview had Hank crying. I don't think old Hank was crying. Did Muhammad Ali cry after he beat Frazier, after he beat Norton, even after he beat Sonny Liston? I don't remember. Now, call me 844-527-8723. I may be wrong on this, but I don't recall Muhammad Ali crying after those major victories. Think about that. You remember the thrill in Manila. You remember the fights with Foreman. These were brawls. I mean, these guys were taking beatings for 3 minutes, for 12 rounds, 10 rounds. You stand in there and take a beating from guys that could take your head off with one punch. And I don't remember them coming up and I don't remember their first instinct was to cry. They were celebrating. Heck, I won. I beat that guy. And of course, you know, we all know Muhammad Ali was a little bit more flamboyant than that. Greatest of all time, if you ask Ali. I don't know that there was any footage of this, but when Chuck Yeager strapped on the X1 and decided to take a shot at breaking the speed of sound to see what happens, you all know that when that idea was first concocted to see if we can break the speed of sound, there were people saying, if you do, you're going to explode. We don't know what's going to happen if the speed of sound is broken. Well, somebody had to figure out what happens. So Yeager straps on a rocket, lights it up, and breaks through it. I don't think when he came down, I've seen some footage of him after the aircraft was recovered. I don't remember him crying. That's a movie, Ed. Ed just reminded me that Rocky did cry when he beat Apollo Creed. And so that's a movie. But it's funny, I think what reporters are most interested in now, when an athlete does something beyond what most of us can do, there's a reason why sports players get paid the amount they do. It's because they are supreme athletes. I mean, they can way outperform the average person. And so we like to watch it because, not because we imagine ourselves doing it. I watch sports because it's a display of incredible talent. But in our after-game reporting nowadays, and it seems like the athletes are playing into it, what we need to really know is, well, how do you feel about this, LeBron? Well, I just want to thank everybody. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm off on this. But I think it also plays into another. It's a parallel, and I want to read an article that I found over the weekend that I think kind of plays into this a little bit as well. Now, I want to be careful to draw too many parallels here because I don't think LeBron would do something like this. I don't think Phil Mickelson, the great golfer Phil Mickelson, would do any of this. I don't remember Jack Nicklaus crying when he won so many Masters or majors. Now, maybe he did. Mike, you're a golfer. You might remember times. I just don't remember seeing this new phenomena we see in sports today, that every time somebody wins, the first thing we do is cry, and then the first question the reporter asks is not what was the game plan, LeBron, to stifle Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and hold them to under 20 points? What was the game? How did you do it? You guys are genius. These are two of the best three-point shooters in basketball today. LeBron, what was the strategy? No, we don't want to know that. We want to know what. LeBron, tell us how you feel about this. I'm so happy. I'm overwhelmed with emotion. No, I don't want to know how LeBron feels about it. I want to know how the heck did they stop Steph Curry and MVP of the league. This guy can put up three-pointers from the half-court line. I want to know what kind of strategy they come up with to stop Klay and Steph from burying it. I thought this game was going to be a blowout. I thought Cleveland was going to get killed. They were playing in Oakland at Golden State's court. I didn't want to hear about how LeBron felt. I wanted to hear what LeBron thought about the game that I just watched and was standing up, couldn't believe, cheering at the end of it. Well, that's why I'm a little bit tired today. But we have this new idea in our culture. It's about our exposing our feelings, making sure everybody knows how we feel about something. And I came across this article last night, or yesterday, and the title of the article is Teens' Photos of Crohn's Disease Renew Questions on Social Sharing. Now, of course, some of you are going to say, oh, Kreslin, that's just not fair. There's a big difference between social media and people venting on social media. And people venting on social media and sharing way too much information on social media. There's a big difference between that and LeBron crying after a game or any of these other athletes crying after a game. There's a big difference. And I'm not so sure there is that big of a difference. There's a difference, obviously. I'm acknowledging right out of the gate. I'm stretching it a bit, if you will, to make a jump from athletes crying after a victory to this teen sharing pictures of her Crohn's disease on Facebook. But I want to make this connection. Because if we don't understand that this is the culture we live in today, it's one of our great problems that we have today. We're a feelings-based culture. We do things now not necessarily because they've been thought out and are based or anchored in some facts. We do a great deal of what we do today because we feel. We operate on our feelings. As I've said many, many times on this radio program, Patty and I used to be involved in a ministry working with couples that were in crisis. Almost exclusively, I would say that the reason their marriages got in crisis was because they were making decisions based on their feelings. They abandoned facts and they went to feelings. So we have elevated in our society this great idea that our feelings are more important than anything. And so last night as I watched LeBron, I didn't really care about his feelings about the win. Obviously, it was, I mean, you would have to be nearly brain dead to not understand right out of the gate, I bet you LeBron's happy. I mean, come on. Do we really need LeBron to go through, you know, his life and how it all led to this? And, you know, that can be some after commentary about bringing home a championship to the poor Cleveland folks. And if you're listening from Cleveland, congratulations. You guys finally got one. It's tough to be a Cleveland fan, I'll tell you. They don't win a whole lot of national championships in anything. So, yeah, that's a good story. But right after the game, anybody who's watching that game is trying to figure out how they stop Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. How did that happen? I wanted to hear analysis from LeBron, from Kyrie. Not the overwhelming emotion, but I think we have a new value in our culture. And the value is feelings. Feelings are paramount almost over everything. And I will tell you that we are seeing evidence of this in just about every sector of our culture. We see it in economics. We see it in marriages and family. We see it in churches. We see it in sports. We see it across the world and across the a whole host of elements of our culture. At least I see it. Maybe you don't. If you don't, call me at 844-527-8723, 844-5-CRUSADE. Tell me if you see it as well. We have moved from not that we were ever exclusively a fact-based culture, but we certainly seem to have jettisoned that. And we move to now how we feel about things. I kid around about this all the time. The facts are the Republican Party has been lying to their constituency for decades that they're pro-life. They've been lying to people for literally 40 years that they are pro-life, and if they get power, they are going to advance pro-life positions. Well, the facts are that's just not true. They haven't done that. But you know what? The average voter who will still ally themselves with the Republican Party will say, well, they'll feel like they're going to do it this time. They won't necessarily frame it that way, but it comes out like this. Well, this time it'll be different. That's a feeling conclusion. You just feel like the GOP is going to do this. And you're going to make a decision not based on fact, because the GOP has done nothing, or very little. I mean, I shouldn't say nothing. So we seem to have moved as a culture away from making decisions and thinking through facts and into a culture that now what's most important is our feelings and how we feel about certain things. And we are driven to this article titled Teen Photos of Crohn's Disease Renew Questions on Social Sharing. This is what this author says. When it comes to disclosing illnesses on social media, how soon is too soon and how much is too much? 3 years ago, Lisa Boncheck Adams, suffering from breast cancer, tweeted about every aspect of her condition to more than 15,000 followers and countless others on Facebook. Adams, who later died, was severely criticized for oversharing the details of her illness. Journalist Emily Keller asked rhetorically in The Guardian, should there be boundaries to this kind of experience? Well, I'm not advocating boundaries. Let me be clear here. I'm not suggesting that all sports coverage should be restricted from asking questions about the emotional feelings of the athlete after a win or a loss. Nor am I advocating that social media should be, there should be a law created that prevents people from sharing intimate personal details. This is kind of a self-governor sort of thing. At what level is too much too much? Now, she says, meet Amy Ruski, a spunky and outspoken British teenager with a penchant for short skirts and body piercings. Ruski suffers from Crohn's disease, a kind of inflammatory bowel disease that disrupts the entire digestive system. My daughter, Caitlin, has a cousin of this. After years of suffering, including incredible pain, multiple mouth ulcers, and constant stomach cramps, Amy finally had an ileostomy, a surgical procedure in which her small bowel was taken outside of her abdomen and connected to a bag that collects the waste. To help others, inform others, Amy posted about her illness on Facebook in late May. She wrote, "My Crohn's has left me with a permanent ileostomy. No large intestine, colon, rectum, anus, or inner thigh muscles that as they were used for plastic surgery on my wounds." Now, this is a debate. This is just a conversation, folks. I have a particular point of view. I'm curious about yours. Has Amy crossed the line? Is it a TMI, you know, that quaint little phrase we use, too much information? Is it too much information, and what is the purpose, and does it feed into our seemingly insatiable appetite for feelings-based media, feelings-based programming? Is it too much? Is there a value to restraint? And this is the great debate, in my view. Do we value restraint anymore? Or is how I feel about something the most important, how I feel about things the most important thing for people to know? I don't think we've seen a net gain when it comes to a feelings-based culture. I don't think that's been a net gain for us. In fact, I think it's led us in directions that has contributed to what I consider the meltdown of our culture. I've seen it firsthand as a pastor, and seeing the wreckage that comes on the family when feelings are paramount in either the husband or the wife. Where does duty lie anymore? Is duty even considered anymore? Do we just have a duty to do certain things? Or are those values just those naturally restraining values just so passe now? Are they just so old? Kreslins, we don't think about duty anymore. When you get off your stupid high horse about restraint and duty, we are in the 21st century. We operate on what we feel about things. And if we want something, we get it. We don't think about being duty bound to not. If I'm married and that girl's cute to me, I'm going to go for it because my happiness is the most important. My feeling of being happy is the most important thing at this moment. So, Kreslins, don't tell me I can't go have lunch with her. Don't tell me I should restrain my thinking when I look at her and think, oh, she's pretty. Don't tell me to follow my duty to obey my Lord and my covenant. I don't want to obey. I don't want to be duty bound anymore. I want to be unrestrained, Kreslins. I'm not interested in your stupid little pie in the sky ideas of moral restraint, of duty. I'm interested in how I feel about things. And if the GOP is going to tell me, if the Republican Party is going to tell me again this year that if I vote for them, I will limit the growth of government. I know they don't, but I feel like they're going to, Kreslins. So get off your high horse about this stupid moral restraint. We don't buy it. This is the 21st century. I want to share pictures of my Crohn's disease on the internet. And I'm hoping that I can be as successful as this girl was and get 100,000 followers. As you all know, the semi-competent executive producer of the show, by the way, who's arrived on scene. Good morning, Mr. Semi-competent. How's it going? I got no microphone this morning, as usual. Let's see if we can cue it up. Keep talking.
How's it going?
There you go. All right. Now, keep going.
How's it going?
There we go. Better, better, better. You're still alive. That's that gain over there on that doggone channel. As you all know, my semi-competent producer's son, who wandered into the show at 25 minutes past the hour, has a disability. And when we first found out about this, when he was 2 years old, the natural impulse was to find a support group. And we were fortunate that we had two physicians who didn't poo-poo the idea of a support group, but steered us away from it gently. And so we never got involved in this support group for this very rare disease. And I made that call partly because I didn't want to sit around in circles and talk about the challenges that my son was facing or the challenges that we faced as a family with Trent making routine visits to the emergency room because some leg was sideways. So we didn't want to sit around and just agonize and grieve about that. We wanted to look forward and say, well, how do we get through this latest crisis? And now I say that, and people are going to say, well, Kreslins, you're just being too hard. Well, no, we did it purposely because we didn't want his disease to define him or define our family. We didn't want to victimize ourselves by a very challenging disease. Trent's had over 20, 30 surgeries. He's had a medevac flight out of our near front yard. He's gone through a great deal, and the family has gone through it with him. And we were victimized in a way that's unavoidable. He had this bad disease. He fractured a lot. He had all sorts of other problems. But we didn't want him to be victimized by it, and we didn't want our family to be victimized. We grew up as normal a family as you can, with fairly routine visits to the emergency room and surgeries that followed. That was a choice that denied emotions and focused on restraint. And I think Trent would agree, perhaps live on the air he'll change his mind, but I think Trent would agree that it's been a net gain for all of us. We had a relatively normal family, and Trent leads a relatively normal life. Conversely, I know people who have this disease that Trent has. It's a very rare disease. And I know some of them that are completely paralyzed, not physically, but have completely paralyzed themselves as it relates to interacting with society. Trent has a very severe case of this. He was predicted to be on assisted walking devices at this point. In other words, he should have had a walker or a cane or a wheelchair. Many other outcomes should have been in his future. Trent walks relatively normally because of a surgical mistake, not because of the disease. He's got a complication with his foot, but he is on no assisted devices. He's completing his bachelor's degree here in December. He'll go on to have a relatively normal life, even though by their qualification and their grading of this disease, he has a very severe form of it. The folks at the National Institutes of Health, to which he was invited to be examined by them, have tried to understand why he's doing so well comparative to other patients that are in his have this disease at his severity. And they privately have said it's because of some of those decisions we made about exercising restraint, not giving in to our feelings. The best advice we got from a physician was treat Trent just like you treat your other three children, and we did. To the best of our ability, we did. Well, we exercised restraint over our feelings. There were certain things we just had to do because when his leg is sideways, you got to take him to the hospital. You can't just stand there and cry. You got to get yourself under control, and you got to make good decisions. Well, that, as a family, is something we did. We didn't go out on social media, and we didn't, you know, throw out to everybody, oh, our son has this horrible disease. Now, I may get a lot of pushback from people on this, and they may say, well, Kreslins, you're just being cold, hard, and crass on this. You just don't understand. But I want to also say, yeah, I do understand. And I think there's a value to duty. I think there's a value to restraint. And we live in a culture that seemingly has just jettisoned all of that. What is most important now is, LeBron, how do you feel about the win? I wanted to know, LeBron, how the heck did you guys figure out how to stop Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on their home court? How did you do it? That, to me, I want to know how Phil Mickelson sank a 50-foot putt on a rain-soaked green. I want to know how Dale Earnhardt Jr. survived a 500-mile race at 200 miles an hour on high bank turns. Muhammad Ali told us how he beat Joe Frazier because he's the greatest. That's what I want to know. So am I off base? Have I gone too far? Trent, weigh in real quickly. We got to go to a break. I'm sorry, Ed. We'll come right back to you after this break. But Ed, Trent, you and I had a discussion about this.
Oh, you know how I feel about this.
But did you heard my reasoning now?
I hear your reasoning, but I still disagree with the crying thing. I think in things like major sports, this is what these guys work their entire lives for every day. It's towards getting this type of championship thing. And when you look at, you know, some of your guys' favorite players, like Peyton Manning, has cried after a Super Bowl win.
I haven't seen him ever cry.
I'm pretty sure he has.
I've never seen Peyton Manning cry.
Pretty sure he has. And this was literally a historic win. No team has ever come back from 1-3 and won against everybody, you know, against a historic regular season team.
Kyrie wasn't crying.
They didn't really show Kyrie.
Yeah,
it was pretty much all LeBron. They showed LeBron, J.R. Smith, a bit of Kyrie, but the majority of them talking was about LeBron.
No, I know. I don't know. Trent and I are just going to disagree on this. Part of this is because I'm 57. I came from a time where that just wasn't what you did. If you won a major championship at anything, like I was saying, Jack Nicklaus, the great golfer, the Golden Bear, he never cried after winning a Masters or a major. It was like, whew. Can't believe I won. All right, folks. Listen, I will get back to you right after this break here. Want to remind everybody our telephone number is 844-5-CRUSADE, 844-527-8723. Remember, if you've missed any of this segment or any of my previous shows, they're all available for streaming and download at theveritasradionetwork.com. You'll need a Founders Pass membership to gain access to those downloads, but you can get that Founders Pass membership for as little as 23 cents a day. Please click the join button at the top of any of our pages there at veritasradionetwork.com. Please become a Founders Pass member today if you haven't done so. This is the Mark Kreslin Show on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be.